What's up, Baddie Bees? I'm Brianna, mom, wife, serial entrepreneur, and host of the Badass Basic Bitch podcast. Each week, I sit down with a seemingly ordinary woman who's doing extraordinary things, and I get to share her story with you. So let's go. Buckle up as we're going to get real and dive into the shit nobody talks about. Welcome to the Baddie Bee Club.
This is the one that like everybody wants to know and wants to understand. If you are experiencing hair loss and your skin is dry and you sleep 8, 9, 10 hours, you wake up, you're still tired, you're dragging, maybe you're feeling constipation. Maybe you're the person that like it's 80 degrees outside and you're still like wearing a beanie or rocking a hoodie. Like, you might have a thyroid problem. That's very indicative of hypothyroidism. And these are some of the common things that women experience and that they're often told like these things are normal.
Welcome back to another episode of Badass Basic Bitch. On today's episode, we are joined by Dr. Jolene Brighton, a hormone expert, nutrition scientist, and leader in women's medicine. Dr. Brighton is completely dedicated to uncovering the root cause of hormonal imbalances. Through her website and influential presence on social media, she empowers women globally to seize control of their health and hormone well-being. And that is what we're talking about today, folks. So thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Brighton.
Yes, thanks for having me.
So before we dive in, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, well, if you don't follow me, then you might not know anything about me. So that's what I'm going to assume here. So I am board certified in naturopathic endocrinology, which means that I'm a hormone doctor. That's my focus. But before I ever did that, I was getting a degree in nutrition science and studying nutritional biochemistry. And so I'm very much focused on how food can influence our health. But being a medical provider, I also look at diagnosing and making sure that people are getting the right treatment, even by way of medication. And so I'm very integrative in that way. I'm also a certified sex counselor, which isn't because I want to do talk therapy with people. I just knew that, you know, when it comes to medicine, often women's bodies are pathologized and, you know, things are just called dysfunction when they're not necessarily dysfunction. So I wanted to be able to do my job, understand, is this hormonal? Is it something else going on? Or do I need to make that referral to a sex therapist, somebody who holds a psychology degree to help walk you through this? So that's a bit about me. I'm also a mama of two, as we were discussing before that. I actually have two boys and I am raising them to be very period positive, female body literate.
I love that. And you're an author too, right?
Oh, I am. Yeah. We didn't even talk about that. I write books. Yes. So I've written
on the side of everything I do, I just write some books.
Yeah, that makes it sound so flippant. Oh, it's, you know, it's so funny because I think about, whenever I will talk about this, like at parties and stuff, people are like, oh my gosh, you're an author. Like I've always wanted to write a book. And like, I just never have been able to do that. And you look at how many people state that they want to write a book and they never can, or they never get to it. Like, you know, they just don't do it. And people, you know, will be like, oh, that's like so amazing. I'm like, the thing about writing a book is that it is so much work. And if you write a book and you're actually writing it, because there's a lot of authors who are clinicians, they're not writing their own books. And that's not because like, it's because they're just not writers, right? They're really great doctors and they have really great ideas, but they're not writers. But I often say, as somebody who does write their own books, like you only write a book if you can't not write that book, where it's just like burning inside you. And you're like, I have to write this. I have to put this information out into the world. And so my most recent one is This Normal, which was born out of every conversation that I've had on the internet, in person, with patients, in airports, sometimes people following me to the bathroom and catching me when I come out of the stall. And it, I'm not even kidding. This has happened more times that actually now that when I speak at conferences and stuff, I bring somebody to watch my back when I go to the bathroom, if there's not a private bathroom, because I'm like, I just feel so insecure peeing and knowing that you're waiting and listening to me. So, but this book is all about all the things we should have ever known about our bodies that like somebody should have taught us. And what's so unfortunate is when you look at the research and we seem medical gaslighting, medical negligence, where doctors yes. don't actually diagnose women. They dismiss women. They just put them on the pill and don't ask, why do they have symptoms? And when you look at that research and the impact it has, not only on their physical health, but also their mental health. And so often what they find is that women blame themselves personally for what they didn't know. And I could encounter this with patients where I just had a patient consult last week and I was talking with this patient of like, okay, somebody should have told you this, like, let me fill it in. And she's like, no, I really should have just known that myself about my body and all this stuff. I'm like, I had to go to medical school to know that. So I don't think you should feel guilty for not knowing that, which is, you know, where is this normal? That's part of where it came from is I'm like, nobody should be gatekeeping this information. Like, just want you to have one resource that you can turn to understand your hormones, to understand your periods, to understand your libido, your orgasms, like to understand your body, take ownership, take better care of your body, but also have a better conversation with your provider.
Yeah. And I love that title because I think we all hear that right now. And we're like, they have that one doctor friend or family member that's a doctor where we've definitely text a picture or a message and be like, is this normal?
Yeah.
should this rash look like this? What is this? So I love that title. Okay. Let's dive into the hormonal stuff and let's talk about, is it normal? So what are some signs that our hormones aren't normal or there's an imbalance?
This is such a great question to start with because this is the one that like everybody wants to know and wants to understand. So if you are experiencing hair loss and your skin is dry and you sleep 8, 9, 10 hours, you wake up, you're still tired, you're dragging, maybe you're feeling constipation. Maybe you're the person that like it's 80 degrees outside and you're still like wearing a beanie or rocking a hoodie. Like, you might have a thyroid problem. That's very indicative of hypothyroidism. If you are noticing that your skin is oily, maybe you have acne, you're not sure when your period is going to show up, you're noticing that maybe you are also losing hair on your head, that can be pointing towards polycystic ovarian syndrome or PCOS. If you're somebody who rages out a week or maybe more before your period, you find that you have insomnia, you're feeling like you're either oscillating between anxiety or feeling like, you know, you're really angry, then this could be pointing to low progesterone. And these are some of the common things that women experience and that they're often told like these things are normal. Now, with any of those three, which is just the three, there's many hormones in the body that I just described. All of those, you can see issues and changes with your period. Maybe your period is heavier. Maybe it's regular. Maybe it's shortening. Your cycle is shortening and you're wondering what is going on. And so often when we talk about hormones, the first place people's minds go to is sex hormones. They're reproductive hormones. And unfortunately, that's often true for your doctor as well. And then the only place they evaluate are the reproductive organs. And this negates the fact that I just described anxiety or feeling rage. Maybe you're feeling depressed. You're losing muscle mass. You wake up in the morning, you're fatigued, and you just don't feel like you have very good boundaries or gumption or care to do anything. And that might be low testosterone because these hormones have receptors all over our body, including our brain, but also our heart and our bones and our muscles. And so anytime the hormones fall out of whack, we can feel it in different systems of the body outside of just the reproductive system. And that's what I want women to really understand because for a very long time in medicine, it has gone that once you're menopausal and your period stops, nobody really asks about these hormones anymore. And we're really seeing a large movement of women advocating for better care in menopause. I mean, we're seeing a large movement as well of advocating for better care than just being given the pill and no discussion of like anything else that could possibly be happening or other options that you could do. We're seeing a huge movement of women demanding better and pushing back on condescending providers, people who are condescending who, you know, if you're listening to this, you can leave us a comment. Have you ever heard a doctor say, there's no such thing as a hormone imbalance? No, but do you diagnose PCOS? It's a hormone imbalance. Do you ever worked with somebody with infertility? They likely have hormone imbalances. Diabetes, hormone imbalance, with insulin, hypothyroidism, hormone imbalance. When patients say hormone imbalance, a provider should say, tell me more about that. Help me understand, what does that mean to you? What's actually going on? And so that's what I talk a lot about in the book, because what chance does a woman stand if she goes to her doctor and she's like, I feel like I have a hormone imbalance. And they're like, well, there's no such thing. And they shut it down. They don't even listen. But if she can say, I think I have a hormone imbalance, and then she uses one of the checklists or charts and is this normal, and it says, because I have oily skin and acne and irregular periods, and sometimes I get this little hair on my chin and then on my chest and on my abdomen, and these are pointing to signs of high androgenism, you know, and like has this conversation in this way, it can really start to change things. I think that medicine just unfortunately has a lot of ego and a lot of bias against women, and that is something we have to see change.
Yeah, man. And I bet you there's so many people right now that just heard that and was like, oh my God, that's me. Oh my God, I have that. Oh my God, this. I think also too, like a lot of the times when you go to a doctor and you're describing some of those things, there's some overlap or confusion of it being like a mental health problem instead of a hormonal or insert whatever problem. Like, if I went to my doctor today, and I don't actually know this, I'm just saying, if I went to my doctor today and I was like, I'm tired all the time, I get 8 hours of sleep and I wake up and I'm tired and I don't want to do anything, and I feel like I'm just like so mad and angry, they'll be like, okay, it sounds like you probably need to talk to a therapist. Okay, I'm going to go talk to a therapist. And that therapist is going to be like, okay, it sounds like you probably need medication, but you're just masking the problem instead of really looking at, why do I feel these things? And maybe it's a hormonal thing that I could try to help. No one's ever trying to help you in that realm. They're just trying to put on some kind of medication. In my experience, do you also feel that way?
There's a lot of women who echo this experience. And I do want to say to people, because it can feel just so disheartening, is that there are a lot of doctors out there who are also recognizing that this is how they were trained and it doesn't serve women, and they are working to make this better. So don't lose hope, and don't feel because you've had a bad experience with a provider that there isn't someone out there to help you, because there are a lot of doctors who are also very frustrated by all of this. And what you are talking about is really this idea rooted in hysteria. Back in the day when, you know, medicine's like your uterus is just wandering and, you know, making you crazy, and hysteria was still in the DSM, which is how you diagnose mental health disorders, in the 1980s is when it was finally removed. And so I want people to really understand that the attending physicians that your doctor may be doing their residency under may have still been taught about hysteria. And so it's a very relatively new thing for, you know, doctor. And I say this because this is my lifetime, that it is a relatively new thing for doctors not to be hearing about hysteria. And so understand there's that piece. There's also the piece that, I mean, let me just talk about, like, it wasn't until the late 90s that they were like, you have to include women in trials. You can't just decide that they're just a smaller version of a man and just say everything applies to them. So that just happened. It wasn't until 2024 that we saw any president make a major initiative to actually study women's medicine. Like, this is my entire life. And for so many of us, this is our entire life. And so this experience of having things being like just in your head, it's born out of bad medicine back in the day. It's also born out of the fact that, like, we haven't been included or even prioritized in so many trials. And I actually saw a post, National Geographic was talking about this, and someone sent it to me because they're like, you just have to read the comments, which I went there being like, yeah, it's going to be like women being like, thank you. Yes. Include us. Like that. No, it was men being like, this is so laughable that you think you've never been a priority and all this stuff. And it was just astounding to me. It also speaks to me as a mom. It speaks volumes to the poor education these individuals have received, that they can't even understand the statistics and the objective data, but they first center themselves in all of it. So anyhow, that was a little bit of a tangent, just to say, if you've ever experienced that, there's good reason why it does exist. And you will, if you experience being offered a mood altering medication and you reject that, you will often be, if that's all that person's going to give you, you're often going to hear things that may be frankly just gaslighting. And understand that that's where it's all born out of. And I just want you to have that information so you know you're not crazy. It's not in your head. What you're experiencing is real.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. When we look at hormone issues that we're having, what typically causes this? And I love that you center around the food we eat and nutrition, because I'm like, fully believe and bought into you are what you eat. And so I'd love to hear from you, like, what are some other causes or common causes of hormone imbalances?
Yes, let's talk about that. Well, let me just like first say that if anybody is on antidepressants or anti-anxiety medication, and that's what you needed, there's nothing wrong with that. So just, I'm like, I feel like I should just say that piece. What we were speaking specifically to is just telling you, you know, you're fatigued,
the push.
You must be depressed. Yeah. So when it comes to issues with what's affecting our hormones, so there's definitely nutrition, and we've got research on the ultra processed foods and their effect on our body for sure. They're going to disrupt your insulin. They're going to disrupt your hormones in your body. But some of the more insidious things, light pollution, there have been studies showing that disrupting the circadian rhythm, that can be detrimental to cortisol and even menstrual cycles. It may even affect how we ovulate. There are environmental toxins, right? This is the one that, like, it just always sucks to talk about because there's so much that's outside our control, but that's where we don't focus. We focus on what is inside our control and what can we actually take action on in our own homes, personal care products, what we're cleaning our house with. You know, three tips that I give everybody. Number one is take off your shoes before you come in the house. I actually have these like slippers down here I'm looking at. I just bought new house slippers. They're like the absolute best. You can wear your slippers inside. Don't wear your outside shoes in your house. You're tracking in like what was in the parking lot. What was that car dripping next to you where you were loading your groceries? What was in the grass that you walked through? Like you have to look at all of these things that you come into contact with, and not to mention dog poop. Like you don't want that in your house, but I don't know how many evidence that affects your hormones, but just be mindful of that. So that's number one. Number two is anything with a fragrance, get rid of it. Even if it says fragrance free, you have to still check, get rid of it. If it's a candle, Glade plug-in, Febreze, throw them out. Immediately, it's a no. If it is like, well, this is my like really expensive conditioner and like, I don't want to part with it. That bottle is your countdown. So you're going to go through that bottle and you're going to finish it. But in that time, you're going to go ahead and research what else could you be using instead that doesn't have that. Number three is open up your windows. Once a week, air out your entire house. Your indoor air pollution, much worse than outdoor air, unless like, you know, there's a fire or something major going on. And these days you could check your phone.
Yeah. Unless you use the air doctor purifier, right? Like if you use a purifier, that's getting rid of all of those contaminants. But yeah, absolutely. I have something to share that has made a real difference in my life and can do the same for yours. Did you know that we spend 90% of our time indoors and take around 20,000 breaths each day? That's a lot of air we're breathing in. And especially when, according to the EPA, it can be 2 to 5 times more polluted than air outside, and sometimes even up to 100 times worse. It's no wonder air pollution contributes to nearly 7 million premature deaths worldwide. So what can we do about it? I found a solution and I want to share it with you. The Air Doctor Air Purifier. This device has been getting a lot of attention by big names like CNN, Money, and ABC, and for good reason. It filters out 99.99% of harmful contaminants. I'm talking allergens, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mole spurs, and even bacteria and viruses. And it has been changing my springtime allergies. Every March, like clockwork, that pollen and dust in our area go through the roof, and it is just a nightmare for me and my kids. But since I've had the Air Doctor in our home, this time of year has become so much more bearable. Breathing easier has literally changed my springtime experience. And because I think this could really help you too, I've got a special offer to share. When you go to airdoctorpro.com and use my promo code BBB, you get up to $300 off air purifiers. Plus, exclusively for podcast listeners, there's a bonus, a free 3-year warranty on any unit, adding an additional $84 value to your purchase, all with a 30-day breathe easy money back guarantee. So if you're not completely satisfied, you can return it, no questions asked, minus the shipping. So why not give it a try? Head over to airdoctorpro.com and use that promo code BBB. Trust me, your lungs will thank you.
So those three things can immediately start affecting your hormones in a very positive way. So, you know, I could go on forever because as I talk about, is this normal? There's just like all of these buckets, all of these ways we can be impacted: our stress, our sleep, our community, the people that we are spending time with, how those people make us feel, how we talk to ourselves, how we talk to ourselves can influence our hormones. Negative self-talk has been shown to be inflammatory in nature. If inflammation goes up, cortisol has to respond. And if your body can't control inflammation, then we're going to see that you can't dock hormones on the receptors. Now, even if you make those hormones, you can't use them.
Yeah. So my son's in fourth grade and I have some friends who have daughters also in fourth grade. They're 9. And I was a little bit shocked with how many 9-year-old girls are starting their menstrual cycle. Mm-hmm. And it's coming from me though. When I started my menstrual cycle, I was like 16. So, and I know that's very late in comparison. Are you finding in your research that girls are starting their menstrual cycle earlier because of food, or is it normal? And then I'm just finally hearing about it because, you know, when I'm 9, no 9-year-old's telling me that they have their menstrual cycle.
So, you know, certainly I knew one girl, she was like 9 or 10 when she had her period when I was in school. So I want people to understand that there are some people who will get their period at that age, and that can be normal. What's interesting is that, you know, at this point, we're like, is it a trend? Are we seeing it a lot more? Like, we need more data. But what I will say is there have been some studies that I've looked at in Central America that have been interesting. Women who are, so like myself, Latinas, like our hair is different, right? We got to use different products. The same is true for Black women as well. So we get a higher exposure, if you're not careful, to endocrine disruptors. I mean, they're putting like freaking formaldehyde in our hair products. Like, if I just feel like they hate me when I see that stuff, I'm like, you hate me. You hate me. So what we see is that these young girls who are using more beauty products, we'll just put it in that camp, not just hair products, but lotions, makeup, all of that, there seems to be that they are starting their periods younger. And we're seeing precocious puberty. Now, the other thing that we have to recognize is that these environmental toxins that are out there, the forever chemicals, the plastics, they are endocrine disruptors. That means that they can either stop you from making your hormones, they can block your hormones from working, or they themselves can stimulate your receptors so that basically the cell's like, I think this is the hormone, but it behaves in not the best of ways. And this isn't just a women's health issue. We also are seeing this affecting men. And I think this is the first time that I really saw the media stop and take it seriously. Almost everything, if it's like through the lens of women's health, it's like dismiss them, gaslight them, get them to act a certain way. Like, it's not your chemicals. It's not that's not the problem. That's not what's going on. When it came out that men potentially have 50% of the sperm today that their grandfathers did, that male infertility is on the rise, that we are seeing less sperm quality and less numbers of sperm actually being available, that's when people are like, oh, take this seriously. And that comes back to endocrine disruptors as well. That comes back to chemicals, right? Because it's now a man's issue. But what's really interesting is that, you know, if you look at studies, some of these studies are really hard to do. So for instance, there's an animal study that showed that flame retardants, so these are things that should never have been in your, like, they should have never. If you go back and you actually look at the history of it, it's it was all for a corporation and never once for our safety. And I know that's really controversial for some people to hear, but it's been well documented that the doctor lied. He lied to get to help push this through so that the chemical companies could put all these things in our mattresses, our beds, our pets' beds is what I was going to say. And that's going to matter. I'm going to say why your pets' beds matter in a second. But you know, also your couches. Well, this animal study showed that these flame retardants actually increase oxidative stress in the ovary. So that's damaging our eggs, but that's also making it so the ovary can't function correctly. And it may actually lead to primary ovarian insufficiency, what people will call early menopause, but it's not menopause. It's the failure of the ovaries to do their job because of these exposures. Now, we've known for a very long time that flame retardants can disrupt thyroid health. And we knew that before humans, we knew it because dogs get Hashimoto's, hypothyroidism. It's an autoimmune disease that leads to hypothyroidism, and cats get Graves' disease, hyperthyroidism. And this was documented in the animal research decades before they ever acknowledged a possibility in humans. Now, mind you, when I was the egg that became me, I was sitting in my grandmother's body. So here's the thing. We can take personal responsibility. We can do all of these things today, but I do want people to just have some grace with themselves, be gentle with themselves, because these generations of exposures, those have also impacted us. And your mom and your grandma were doing the best job that they could. Really, what I find so troubling is how the medical community, and it's changing, it's certainly changing, but even 5 years ago, reproductive endocrinologists would speak about the trouble with endocrine disruptors and fertility, and they would have other medical doctors challenging them, being like, there's not enough data to support that. Dermatologists being like, you know, there's such a small amount of parabens in this, like you don't have to worry about that, except that there's never been a study that's like, well, what happens when you have that small amount in that product, but you also have 13 other products and you also have all these other exposures happening in your life? Like those studies have never been done. And I think we're going to look back at this period of time in the way that we look back of doctors endorsing smoking, the doctors who were dismissing people's concerns about environmental toxins. Like, I hope someone's been out there screenshotting them and catching them, because never, ever should they ever be able to proceed forward with our trust until they own what they said and actually take some accountability for it. And that's how I feel about the doctors who were like, you should smoke. It's so good for you. You should put Coca-Cola in your baby's bottles. Like, you want to earn our trust back. You need to acknowledge. And why bring this up? I don't want to cancel them. I don't want to push them out. I don't want to lynch mob them. Okay. I want people to be very clear, but I do think we have to have that accountability, because there's a lot of ways that medicine has been done. It's made women lose their trust. And I think the only way forward, like, I see this a lot on social media. There was this one doctor that, like, he was so condescending and horrible to people for a very long time. And he stepped into my universe because people were tagging me, because he was like, oh yeah, you think you can't lose weight because you have hypothyroidism. Like, oh yeah. Like, and just really dragging women. And he ended up just taking all that stuff down and then acting like he never said what he said and being like, I'm the lifestyle expert here. I always talk to women about their hormones and stuff. And this medical doctor, so many women are like, this is why we don't trust you, because you did. And so I just say all of that, that piece, because if you are a provider listening, we need to encourage our colleagues that it is okay to come forward and be like, I said this thing. I wish that I didn't say it. I was operating off the information I had. I thought I knew. Right. I got new information. I changed. That's science. That's how medicine should be. And that's a good thing.
Right. Absolutely agree. It's taking that radical responsibility of like, I hear you. I went back. I reflected. I was wrong. And now I'm here to tell you all of the things I just learned, instead of like, okay, let's erase it, pretend it didn't happen, and then I'll come back and then I'll serve the people that I was just like degrading. I see that a lot too in in food, like food stuff and even chemical things, like more natural stuff. And I think too, to me, I'm like, you know, I can follow people and trust people, but at the end of the day, it's really my responsibility to educate myself on like PFAs and what's raw material and how raw material is not even in the ingredient list and where do they get manufactured. Like, I have to take that responsibility for my own self because I'm raising three girls and a boy who I want them to know these things so that when they're older, they also make the right choices and then continue to do that. Great to have your...
Well, I want to commend you for that because think about where we'd all be if our moms had had this information and taught us. Like, we're in Costco and I just really hate Costco with children sometimes because, it's very fatiguing for all of us. A horrible environment, but they're like, just, you know, they also just like want everything in there. Like, this is how they are. Like, that's just how kids are. But it can be just so challenging. So I always tell my kids, like, you can pick one thing. You can have one treat that we're going to put in the pantry. Like, if you just help me out here, I'm sure there's going to be a child expert that's going to be like, don't bribe them. I have to. You don't understand. It's an over an hour drive, like, you know, for me to do this whole Costco trip. Sometimes they have to be bribed. But I have them read the packages. So you know, obviously the two-year-old's not reading it, but he's listening to his brother. And they know that like they can't have snacks in a day that's going to exceed 25 grams of sugar. They can't exceed that 25 grams of added sugar. Now, 25 grams, I feel like is a lot. And yet most people are consuming way more than that. Most children are consuming way more
than
that. It's
like in a bar.
Yeah. And here's the thing is that like we're gluten free. And so sometimes, you know, it's like, ooh, this gluten free, like Bobo's PB&J. I just so everybody knows, we were in Iceland and I totally brought those because I was like, we're going to be doing like a 6-hour road trip. And if I have to pull this thing out to like get us like sanity, then I'm going to do it. So I don't want anyone to feel shamed about it. What I'm talking about here is that my son was like, oh, it's gluten-free. And I'm like, that doesn't always mean healthy. And secondly, let's look at what's in it. Is this what you want to choose? And he's like 16 grams of sugar. And he's like doing math. And he's like, that means I only get 9 grams. Like that would mean that like, I can't, if I wanted to like have a fruit leather or like, you know, there's like, you know, I want something else in the day. If I go to a friend's house and he's like computing it and he's like, I don't want this item because I'm not going to use all of that up. Like that's a lot of sugar. And it made him just really aware, even protein bars where he'll look at it and now, and he's like, that's a lot of sugar and I would rather choose differently. And so it's something that I think is really empowering that, and I just want people to know that like, it's not a perfect dynamic. If you guys have heard me before elsewhere, I've talked about the fact that him going to a birthday party and he like ate like Doritos and candy and all this stuff, comes home with a blue tongue. And he has, he's got a couple medical conditions where he can't do that. And he couldn't go to sleep at night. He was crying. He was like rage. His emotions were like all over the place. He was, he woke up at like 4 o'clock in the morning. He couldn't go back to sleep. Like he was just, it really, really affected him. And he was like, so ashamed at first where he's like, oh man, that was so dumb. Like, I wish, like, why did I do that? And I'm like, it's just data. Like you understood now, you got the data. And that's how I encourage all my patients to look at it as well. If you feel like you've made a mistake, you don't have to judge yourself. You just have to look at it as like interesting data. Great. I have this data now that can influence how I behave in the future.
Right. It's more of, I did not feel like how I wanted to feel when I did that. So next time I need to remember that I didn't really like the feeling that I had when I did that. And so I'm not going to choose that. I'm going to choose something else versus like, oh my gosh, I had all this sugar in it and look what it did. It's like just, it's more intuitive of like, how do you want to feel and how do you want that to impact you? So you're talking about sleep. How does sleep affect our hormones or vice versa? How does hormones affect our sleep?
Yeah. So I brought that up before. I gave some hints at this, but let's like really break this down. So is this normal? Yeah. I actually show a diagram. We've got great research off of like night shift nurses. Bless you. Thank you so much for the work you do. And I hate the toll it takes on your body. And so night shift workers are so absolutely necessary in our society. And yet we do see from that chronic sleep disruption that there's increased inflammation, that there's increased insulin resistance, so risk for diabetes goes up. There can be thyroid disruption, cortisol irregularities, and we see anovulatory cycles, or just overall, the ovaries don't function as they should be in producing hormones. Let me back that up. Anovulatory cycles, for people who don't know, that's lack of ovulation. You're not ovulating. We know that poor quality sleep will also affect our fertility. So whether or not you want to have a baby, if you are in your reproductive years, you do want to be fertile, because that is a sign of vitality. That is health. And so that is the state you should be. If you are no longer in your reproductive window and you are now in menopause, that's normal. That's fine. You're not supposed to be fertile. And so just like to make that distinction, that, you know, it can be tricky because you can tell patients, like, here's all the ways that poor sleep is going to disrupt your hormones. And yet your hormones, like if you have blood sugar issues and they're disrupted, that usually accompanies cortisol issues. And so if your blood sugar drops, cortisol is going to get liberated, other stress hormones as well. That can wake you up in the middle of the night. This is sometimes where you wake up and you're hot and you're sweaty. You're like, am I having a hot flash? But you're also hungry and really angry. No, friend, you need to eat something. And then there's the progesterone, which is probably the most common hormone issue that we will see cyclically that is causing sleep disruption. So progesterone rises only after ovulation. So we ovulate, temporary endocrine structure known as the corpus luteum is made that produces progesterone, and that progesterone gets metabolized and it stimulates the GABA receptor in our brain. We feel less anxious. We feel a lot more in love with life and we sleep a lot better. However, if for whatever reason, like you've had sleep disruption or you've had a lot of stress, or for whatever reason, you're not making enough progesterone, you can struggle to fall asleep, to stay asleep. It can be one of the biggest challenges. And if you're in perimenopause, this is actually one of the most common perimenopausal symptoms I see before hot flashes, before like the things that everybody talks about, vaginal dryness. I actually start to see worse PMS, sleep disturbance, feeling a lot more anxious. That change in progesterone is a big reason why we see, bring it full circle to what you were saying before, being offered anxiety medication when really it's a progesterone issue. And sometimes you benefit from using like an oral micronized progesterone during that luteal phase, especially if you are in perimenopause. It can be just such an aid and so helpful. And it supports brain health, just so people know. It is good for your brain too.
As we navigate through 2024 with aspirations to grow and improve, I found a valuable tool in Babbel, a science-backed language learning app that's genuinely making a difference for me. My journey with Babbel isn't just about picking up a new language. It's a personal mission to reclaim my fluency in Spanish. With two daughters excelling in immersion class, my goal is to keep pace with their proficiency, and it has become urgent. By the end of this year, I aim to be fluent again, and Babbel is guiding me one day at a time. Unlike traditional methods that demand significant time and financial investments, Babbel offers a practical alternative. Its quick 10-minute lessons crafted by a team of over 150 language experts are designed for real-life application. This approach has not only helped me brush up on essentials, conversation skills, but also integrate learning seamlessly into my daily routine. And the real beauty of Babbel lies in its focus on authentic conversations and its use of conversation-based teaching, which prepares you for real-world interactions. So whether it's ordering food, asking for directions, or engaging with shops, Babbel's courses have significantly boosted my confidence in using Spanish outside of a classroom setting. Plus, the advanced speech recognition technology has been amazing for refining my pronunciation and accent, ensuring that I'm not just understood, but also speaking correctly. The effectiveness of Babbel is supported by studies from reputable institutions asserting that 15 hours on the app is the same as going to a full semester of college-level language learning. With over 10 million subscriptions sold, it's clear that Babbel has earned its place as a leader in language education. So for those of you who are inspired to embark on your own language learning journey, I'm excited to share an exclusive offer for you. 55% off your Babbel subscription. Simply visit babbel.com/BBB to access this special discount. Embrace this opportunity to enhance your linguistic skills, cultural understanding, and global connectivity. Go to babbel.com/BBB and use my promo code BBB and get your 55% off today. What about, you had mentioned like low sex drive. I'm curious, at what age should women start to see their sex drive start to lower? And then if they're not aligned with that age, what could be causing that problem?
Never. You should never see your sex drive lower just because of your age.
I never knew that.
So let's break that down. Yes. Let's break that. That is like such a myth. Oh, I see it all the time of like, oh, older women just don't want sex. Older women aren't interested in sex. Older women can't have orgasms. Like, lies. In fact, if you do the research, but if you just talk to a woman who's postmenopausal, they have better sex. They no longer have this concern of an unintended pregnancy looming over them. They don't cycle. They don't have progesterone, which will sometimes come in and be like, you don't really want to have sex, you guys. Like I talk about in the book, the cyclical hormones, how they affect you. So here is the thing. There are certainly seasons of your life. If you're not in a good relationship, you're not going to want to have sex. If you have a chronic infection, chronic disease, that may make it so you don't want to have sex because that's going to influence how your hormones change as well. If you are really, really stressed out, you may really, really want sex. You're normal, but a lot of people will not want to have sex. If any input from the environment is telling your body that you're not safe, your body will respond by shifting hormones away from desire for sex and eventually ability to get pregnant because your body wants to keep you safe. And so there are good reasons to not be interested in sex. And it's up to your provider to differentiate, is this hormonal? Is this because of something pathological happening in your body? Is it depression? Is it your relationship? Is it, you know, just the right now, what your life is like? Like your life is not like, you know, freeing you up for these things. Like there's a lot that's got to be sorted in that. But never should they ever be like, well, because of your age, you just aren't interested in sex. That is wrong. That is wrong based on the scientific research that we have and based on listening to women.
Yeah. Man, thank you for busting that myth because I felt like I've been told that my whole life. and I was like, wait, what?
So it is true, Liz. Yeah. Well, you know, something I want to say is that when you lose estrogen and testosterone, as one does postmenopausal, the ovaries stop. They don't make estrogen anymore. Your adrenal glands don't stop. They're still going to make DHEA, which you can convert into testosterone and estrogen, but that might not be enough for you. So if you do lose testosterone and estrogen, we can see that your desire for sex will plummet as well. Often it's, we always hear that like the number one hormone, you know, for libido is testosterone. That's based on men. That's because science says men are the archetype of which you should be like. So it's testosterone for them, but estrogen really, really matters in terms of your desire for sex, sexual fantasies, your ability to become aroused, self-lubrication, all of these things. And so I want people to understand that as you go into postmenopausal phase of life, psychological aspects of sex that kept you out of the mood, those may go away. And that may just like part the clouds for you. However, the drop in estrogen and testosterone, that may be something where you experience low sexual desire. And if that happens for you, there's going to be other symptoms as well. So Is This Normal has checklists in there of like, what is low versus high estrogen? What is low versus high testosterone? What to do about it? How to support yourself? I want people to understand that there is absolutely no natural anything in the world that can jumpstart those ovaries again once they quit to make estrogen, and that you will never have the estrogen that you had in your reproductive years, even if you do hormone replacement therapy. And that's a good thing, but you will never have that level. But also you may need hormone replacement therapy. And yes, sex is very important. World Health Organization is like pleasure is a key component of health. However, I would also argue, I mean, sex is important. but your brain health is really important and your heart health is really important. And as a doctor, I'm like, you not getting dementia or cardiovascular disease or osteoporosis, like these are my big worries. Even though I'm like, I don't want to dismiss your sex life.
Yeah. So how can people, if they're feeling some of these symptoms or they're hearing this and they're like, man, maybe this is something, what can someone do to go to figure out maybe they're having a thyroid issue or another hormonal issue? Like what kind of tests or labs or doctor should they go to?
Sure. So just starting with your primary care doctor, when we look at the United States, insurance just makes life so hard. It really does. But starting with your primary care doctor, somebody who knows you, who knows your history. And before you even go there, you want to write down all of your symptoms. You want to track everything. You want to have your questions written down in an order. And then you want to schedule a specific visit for just that. You don't want to wait until your annual visit where they're like, their agenda is all these other screenings and things to do. You want to specifically ask for an appointment for that. And then you want to have your list of things to discuss with them. And then lab testing. And the labs are going to be different depending on what we're testing for. I think that a full thyroid panel, fasting insulin, hemoglobin A1C, that's a marker of what your blood sugars look like for the last 3 months, vitamin D, CBC, like there's a whole list of labs. Actually, if you go to drbrighton.com, there's an article on when to test your hormones if you're going to do that. But all those labs I just listed, those should be just annual screening exams, especially as we get into our 30s and beyond, so that we're just keeping tabs on things, because nothing is worse than when you actually get labs and they're like borderline abnormal and your doctor's like, well, it's still normal. And you're like, but compared to what? Compared to the elderly population that makes up like one of the biggest groups going to lab and creating the reference range from that, like, I'm 35. Yes. Like why am I being carried compared to like a 75-year-old? Like it's almost always better to compare to your own data. It's also why, like, whenever providers are like, unless it's warranted, you shouldn't just get like lab work or some of these things. And I'm like, I really like to see when people are feeling their best. What do their labs look like? Because we can always go back and be like, that's when you felt your best. Now you don't feel your best. What do things look like? And I think in that way, we're just not doing a good job with preventative medicine. And I get that, you know, it's very interesting for me because I did this full body MRI. I was this company called Pronovo. They were like, hey, can we offer you like a full body MRI and you can share it? And I was and on your social media. I'm like, sure. So I just want people full disclosure. I got this MRI and I go and I get it done. And what's so funny is that my gynecologist, he was just like, these things are so frivolous and people shouldn't be doing this and all this stuff. But you know what they found that he had seen, but he didn't tell me about it. He didn't discuss with me nothing. It's endometriosis and adenomyosis. I would have never known I had that if I didn't get this done. And in fact, when I got it done, I was in denial about it. I was like, no. And when I had said I was getting it done, oh my God, how many doctors were like in my DMs being like, you shouldn't promote this. People shouldn't be getting this done. Like this is going to cause anxiety and worry. And what's funny is that there were a couple other things that came up that warranted just a follow-up with a neurologist and an ophthalmologist just to take a look at it. Everything turned out to be normal, but both of those doctors said, this is so cool. I wish every patient had this. I wish every patient had this and this was available. And I'm like, that is part of why I did it, to promote it, to talk about it, is because they are trying to make it more accessible. But first, there has to be the demand to make it more accessible, to get that price down for people to be able to access this. But I bring this up because I just thought it was so funny that doctors who didn't know anything about me were like, this is bad. This is wrong. You shouldn't have this data. You shouldn't do this. And if it wasn't for that, I would have never found two chronic conditions that weren't disclosed to me that were affecting my fertility, that like, not at all. But then my husband sat with me in that gynecologist appointment, the neurologist appointment, and the ophthalmologist appointment. And he walked away from that saying, I just can't even believe the bullshit you have to put up to with from these female health experts. He's like, the doctor that you had an objective finding that should have been helping you was the first to dismiss you, the first to gaslight you, the first to be like, no way. He's like, and then we go to two other specialists and they're like, great, so glad you did this. This was awesome. Like, and I even met with a second opinion of a fertility specialist. And when she looked at it, she was like, this is so cool. This is, I'm going to get, my husband and I are getting this for our anniversary. Like, we're doing this. And so I tell this story so that people understand you might have one experience with one doctor, but there are lots of great doctors out there with different opinions and experiences. And especially when you go to try to get your hormones tested, the number one doctor that's going to probably dismiss you is going to be your gynecologist as of right now where things are at, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't try. And I would say, go to them with a positive mindset, with the expectation that yes, we are going to partner together and this is going to work.
Yeah. I always say I've had lots of years. I've also had infertility and I learned a lot during my infertility journey because it took me like 2+ years to get pregnant with my first one. And it was because I kept getting all the tests done and everything was completely normal, but I just couldn't release an egg. And I'm like, clearly it's a hormonal thing. I have lots of eggs. We're injecting me with crazy amount of hormones, but I literally can't release one egg. So what's the problem, right? Long story short, I really trusted the doctors and it took me a really long time before I realized that like medical folks, they are a system to be used. They are not a system to help you. And once I realized that, it really changed my perspective of how I communicate and work with doctors because I will come in and I will ask a ton of questions and I will really push back on them until they give me the information I'm looking for. And just the other, like a couple months ago, I had calcifications on my breasts, on both of my breasts. And now every 3 months I have to go get tested to watch the growth. But when I first got diagnosed with it because of a family member who had it, the doctor was giving me the information. And I just sat there and I listened and I was asking all these questions and I just kept asking her questions. And finally she was like, I need you to calm down. I need you to relax. I need you to take a breath. And I just looked at her and I said, do you think I'm like hysterical right now? And she's like, I just think you really just need to calm down. And I was like, lady, I am very calm. I'm asking you questions that are very important to me. If you do not have the time to sit here and answer my questions, is there someone else who can? And she just kept like feeling very defensive. And I think that's the experience is like, look, if you don't want to sit here and chat with me about very important things that have to do with me, then let's move on and get someone else. But I approach all my medical appointments of like, here are my thoughts. I'm going to go and get your hormone checklist, go to my next doctor and say, I want to be tested for all of these. And if I'm on the border, I want to know why and what more we can do to test that. It's like, you really can't be satisfied with someone, a professional, just giving you the information, you trusting them. You have to question and push back, you know, at least now.
Oh, this is so annoying that she said, calm down. There was, I am very, very hard to draw blood on. And I like had to have a vein in my bicep actually. So they had to go deep and use an ultrasound to actually access. And it was a whole thing. And there was the radiologist, he was so great. And he comes in, it's horrible. I was like, this is like, never would I wish this on somebody to have this done. But I was like trying to breathe. And I also like have a major phobia of needles. And like, it was just so funny because I'm like, if I have the needle in my hand, I'm fine. But when you're coming at me and you're going to dig in my bicep, I'm like trying to breathe. And it's so funny because I was like communicating with him, like, I might have a panic attack. Like, I can feel the anxiety in my body. Like, I can just feel this. I'm fasting. So, like, I don't have like any glucose. My brain's like, ah, like, we're panicking. And he said, he was like, just calm down, just calm down. And I laughed and I was like, have you ever said that to somebody and it's actually worked? And has it ever actually helped them calm down? And he started laughing and he's like, I know, it's so silly we say that. And he's like, and he catches himself and we're just like having just very honestly, just like laughing about it. But he's like, I'm just trying to help you. And that's like all I can think to say. But then he's like, let's just breathe together. And he stopped everybody that was in the room. He's like, we're all going to breathe together. We're going to match her breath. We're going to help her breathe. And I was just like, and my husband was also there. And he's like, wow. Like, never have I seen like they need to get this procedure done. And like the whole room stops and they all engage in deep breathing. And he's like, we're doing this because if everybody else is calm and breathing this way, your body will try to match us. And I was like, you are absolutely right, Terry. You are so smart. Thank you for that. But it just reminded me of that because it's like, why are you telling people to calm down? Like I knew he had good intention, but like her telling you to calm down, I would bet is because she wasn't calm. She was being like, you calm down. No. She really needed to say, I calmed. I need to calm down. Like take a breath.
Yeah.
But I love that saying, like, if you don't have the time to explain this to me, can you bring someone else? I don't leave visits until I have asked all of my questions. I don't most of the time tell providers that I am a doctor because I want that full. I will tell you once they do find out I'm a doctor, I get a very different experience from them, but I want to I want to hear how they treat patients. I want to hear like how that goes down. But also a lot of providers will tell you they don't tell their provider like what they do because they don't also want the provider. Sometimes doctors are like, oh, you know what I'm talking about, right? And you're like, no, because this is my own body. And right now I'm having this emotional experience. I'm also attached to this. I can't be objective about this. So like, I need you to dispel it out for me like you would a patient sometimes, just depending on the nature of all of that.
Yeah. This has been so great. I would love for you to share where people can find you if they have questions, want to continue the conversation, find that checklist, give us all your info.
Yeah. So you can find me at drbrighten.com, drbrighten.com. And there you will find just a ton of information, PCOS, endometriosis, hypothyroidism, irregular periods, acne, like you name it. I've got you covered on that website. And then you can also follow me if you're inclined at Dr. Julien Brighten. And that's going to be everywhere on social media.
Awesome. And before we head out, I always ask this on my podcast. If you could give listeners one piece of advice from today's episode, what would it be?
That you know your body. You live in it. You're the only one who can answer if something is or is not normal for you. And that you should be respected in that. So absolutely understand that your doctor has expertise in labs, in diagnosis, in treatment, maybe even surgery. Like they're really great at these things, but you do have an expertise about living in your body and what your experience has been like. And that should be honored.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for the time today. As always, thank you for listening. Check us out on Instagram at @badassbasicbitch. And thank you to Saw and Sign, our production studio. We'll see you next week.